Senator Broxson, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Good morning. How are you doing, Andrew?
Oh, man, I'm doing well. You know what? I wish you had played kickball with us on Saturday. That would have been fun. Did you get invited?
I don't think I did, but that would have been a stretch for me to do that. So
it was a stretch for all of us.
Yeah.
No, because, I mean, Alex and Michelle were both involved, and I was, you know, it would have been appropriate if you had been involved as well. But anyway, so we have a lot. You are like the, how do I want to say this just the right way? You're like the secret linchpin guy working on all of these problems that people don't even realize is working on them. And I say that to your credit. Like, every time I talk to people about a problem that's going on, they're like, yeah, well, we're working with Brox on that. Okay, good. Well, let's have him on the show to talk about it. The most recent one is you had a meeting last week with a bunch of, like, the sheriff and the state attorney and everybody about this contractor competency board, the fraud prevention, and how to help out homeowners who have been defrauded. Tell people maybe kind of what you guys decided or any solutions you came up with.
Well, we convened everyone that had any part in any kind of fraud investigation in the state. There's some confusion on exactly how do you start the process. When you've been defrauded, who do you call? And we walked through that. In fact, I sent you a little thing this morning that kind of outlines the procedure you go through. Every conflict with a contractor is not fraud. Some of it's civil. If you have a dispute on colors or something that they did that you didn't ask for, those are not criminal acts. Those are a thing that you either need to take a small claims or get an attorney. But there are situations, and we know they're there because the investigator was in the room, and we've got some bad behavior by a very few contractors. Most contractors are honorable people that are part of our community. For whatever reason, we had a few that just decided that they wanted to get rich and not do any work. And that's not right. And it's put people that do not have the resources to just shell out $50,000 and then have to make the repairs on their own. So we think we came out with a formula where you call the building inspector office, they determine if it's fraud or if it's civil, and then they refer to the state attorney's office or to the sheriff's office. If it's a multi-county, normally the state attorney might bring in state folks that would be able to deal with multi-counties. So, and that's the case that we have with our current investigation. It is a multi-county infraction, and that's who's handling it. It's the Department of Ag, and they're doing a phenomenal job in giving report back to the state attorney for possible charges.
So it sounds like what I hear you saying, you correct me if I'm wrong, is that you believe, I think the focus, a lot of this so far, the focus has obviously been on the people engaging in the fraud. Okay, that's its own issue. But then, you know, there's supposed to be checks in place to prevent and catch that when it's happening. And the focus, from my opinion, has been on the contractor competency board and their failures. But it sounds like you're saying there also is a gap of knowledge by the public of when they should act, what they should do, who they should contact. And if people are more aware of what they are supposed to do if they think there's a problem, that information flow will help prevent or at least catch these things earlier in the process in the future. Am I hearing you right?
Yes, absolutely. If you have a problem, the first thing you need to do is contact the inspection department because they are the ones who ultimately control the license, but they can't do it without due cause. So if there's fraud involved, then they've got to get the authorities that can legitimize a complaint that would in fact allow them to do certain things with a person's license or their ability to function in the county. So it's due process is the real key. You can't just arbitrarily go and snatch someone's license because you get a complaint.
Right.
You've got to go through a procedure, and that's fair. We'd all want to be treated like that, and that's what we're doing.
Yeah, I mean, and as always, you know, due process is a key bedrock principle of our, you know, our way of life, and you can't just go, as you say, taking away people's licenses because one person complains any more than you can, you know, have some anonymous complaint against a, you know, a neighbor and act on that only. You've got to do research and make sure that you know, there's a process. So the other question, though, is what's the resource? Is there a recourse? Is there a fund? Is there something for people to draw from financially, since I'm assuming they're not going to be able to get money out of these contractors? Is there a governmental backstop here? It seemed to me like, because they were not state contractors, that it wouldn't come out of the state. The county's then thinking, you know, well, should we be funding this? And if so, how? Did you guys come up with any solution on that front?
Yes. There's $500,000 for each event and or each contractor. And the difference between a state-certified contractor and a county is that the state can automatically start a claim. If they're licensed with a county, then they have to go through a different process. If there's a bankruptcy, they have to become involved in the bankruptcy and file a claim against the bankruptcy court. If it's civil, then they have to go and get a judgment against the contractor. Then they can go to the state and say, this is my claim. I'd like to go ahead and make it. And the process, they're welcome to call our office and we can walk them through the process. But it's a little more complicated if it's a locally licensed contractor than it is a state. We do have, there is a situation where part of the claim would, on these circumstances for these contractors, would be a local claim. So they'd have to go through a judgment process and then present it to the state.
Okay. Well, again, you know, that means that there's at least some money available. I mean, $500,000, I think, is not going to quite cover the losses in this particular case, as you know, but a partial is better than a nothing. And in any case, if they're not sure who to call, they can always call your office. We need to take a quick break. When we come back, I know you've also been working on the Baker Act issue, and I want to get an update on that. I know that the Budget Commission came back with some funding, not specifically for this, but more for the Behavioral Health Unit at Baptist last week for about $1.5 million. But what is being done in the near future? Because we're only, I think, about 75 days away from Florida West Hospital no longer taking any Baker Act patients at all. What is being done to solve this problem?
Well, I think they'll still take adults. The challenge is pediatrics. Takes a whole different set of personnel, and West Florida just did not feel like they were in position to do that. But under the law, any qualified institution, such as a hospital, has to take a Baker Act person. What's going to happen now is that if the county or the state brings in a person that's in distress, West Florida would simply transfer them to a certified facility that has the pediatric ability to deal with them. And we think, we've been talking with both Baptist and West Florida, and they're engaged in a reasonable discussion on how to manage this. Both of them are under the gun because we have so many new cases that are created by self-infliction. I mean, people are overdosing on fentanyl and other things that's now rampant in our society. And so it's a social issue that they're trying to deal with medically. And that is a big, big problem. We've seen the cases double. And for whatever reason, our region is an anomaly in the state. Percentage-wise, the population, we're way above the curve as far as the number of people that are being at Baker Act because of drug use.
So I know the conversation had been about creating some kind of a central intake facility, constructing something like that, or, you know, using something that exists already, even on a temporary basis. Again, we're only about 75 days away from HCA Florida West saying, you know, that end of their provisional allowance for the adult Baker Act. Is that a reasonable thing to get a facility or an operation like that stood up in the next, like, 75 days or so?
You know, I know that Representative Salzman's been working on that. She, mm-hmm. she believes it is. I know there's some funding. I believe it's going to take probably some more legislative work to do to take the funding from non-recurring to recurring and just get it in, built into the budget. My guess is if we do it here, they're going to probably want to do it in the other parts of the state. It's a great idea. It takes time, it takes money, and it takes personnel, which, right. As you know, has been a real issue for all these medical facilities, is getting enough people to handle their workload.
Very good. The last thing I was going to ask you about, just because this is an ongoing thing that we don't always hear a lot about, but you have been working and working on getting access to NAS Pensacola. Apparently the road, turning the road into a public highway, is not going to happen, but now there's talk of a sort of a front entrance cul-de-sacking of the museum and the lighthouse. And there's always the issues of how do you create the access for the traffic, and is there going to need to be an overpass over the street? But in any case, is that something that we should be even hopeful is going to happen in the near-term future, or is there something else that we don't know about that's on the horizon?
Well, Andrew, the challenge is that none of these decisions are being made locally. They're being made by people that are in charge in the Pentagon and in Jacksonville, and they're really concentrating nationwide, worldwide, on safety for these bases. And they're not very sensitive to our concern about access that we've had for over 100 years to NAS. And we've got a $2 billion museum there that's now become a member-only museum. And that's not, I think, good for our relationship with NAS Pensacola. But NAS Pensacola, the leadership there has been phenomenal. They've done everything, both past and present, to try to tee this up to make it such an easy decision for DOD. But so far, we haven't gotten an approval. And every part of this has to be approved by someone that does not live here. And that always becomes problematic.
All right. Well, and that's frustrating, but I know that that is the case. I was hoping we might have some other kind of a breakthrough that I had not heard about, but that is the update. The news is what it is, I suppose. Senator Doug Broxson, thank you for working on these issues, oftentimes in a way that we don't always hear about, so I appreciate that effort, and thanks for giving us an update this morning, sir. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, sir. Have a great day.
You too. 6:50 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay.